It's officially 2026, and my New Year's resolution is to prioritize high-quality pieces in my wardrobe. Thanks to Quince, I can already check that off my list. I'm already planning outfits around my new cotton Oxford shirt. It's such a classic, timeless piece that I know I'll be rewearing all year. Need more than just a wardrobe update? Quince has tons of options for the home as well. Maya has had the same dinnerware since college and has finally decided it's time for a refresh, starting with a gorgeous set of ceramic cake plates. Refresh your wardrobe with Quince. Don't wait. Go to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/rehash to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash.
So what was really hard for me this summer is that I'm cutting dairy out of my life. I'm doing an elimination diet. It's disgusting and embarrassing to talk about, but it means that I can't have ice cream. And that has been the source of so much pain for me over the past couple weeks.
What I have to remind you of, Maya, is that we live in a neighborhood where it is impossible to find good ice cream. And so it's really like, you're okay.
I don't know if we've talked about this before, but Hannah and I have a game where we test to see if we can find vanilla ice cream in our area. And on only one occasion have we been able to find it. Our area is like very bustling. There's tons of stores. There's a ton of ice cream shops. But all of them are these fucking artisanal ice cream stores that sell the most vile, disgusting flavors, like, that should be outlawed.
Salt and pepper flavor.
Like cheese flavor. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Earl Grey tapioca or something. Like,
yeah, and like, I'm here for an Earl Grey, but stop combining things. Separate the flavors, please.
And the thing is...
Humble yourself.
Just to be clear, like, I don't eat vanilla ice cream. I'm not a vanilla ice cream girl. I just want, like, a classic. Give me a mint chocolate chip. Give me, like...
Well, yeah, it's more of a...
Cookies and cream.
It's a pursuit for just the basic flavors, yeah. Right? Like, my go-to is chocolate chip cookie dough. There's one place that sells it. Luckily, it's a vegan place. But it just doesn't hit the same.
No, it really doesn't. I'm sorry. It's a little cardboardy, in my opinion.
Hannah and I have been down bad recently. So the thing that we do with each other is that one of us, whoever's down bad, the other person will go... want to go get a treat, and then we'll buy each other a treat somewhere nearby. But we've been doing that like once or twice a week for the past like several weeks.
Yeah.
And like kind of changing up. Yesterday we were both down bad, so we were like, let's both go get a treat and buy it for ourselves.
Is this a beautiful portrait of two pathetic women for you guys?
It's actually so sad. I think it's summertime sadness.
I got the summertime.
How often am I down bad on this podcast? Probably so often.
I know, you guys must think we're like...
two sad broads.
Yeah.
And like, well, we are.
Are you wrong? My yes cat is with us in the room.
She's not a sad broad. She's so pleased today.
No, she's so cute. She looks like Olivia Wilde.
Guys, how many times have we said that on the podcast? It's come to the point where I don't know what I've said on this podcast at all. And especially with the minisodes, talking just like free form, researchless every week is one, dangerous, and two, I don't know what I've said.
I don't know what I've repeated. I also tell you every thought that pops into my head, so I don't know where my thoughts have been. Yeah. Is it on mic? Is it off mic? Who knows?
Yeah, so that's where we're at right now.
That's our update. Maybe by the time you guys are listening, we'll actually both be having an incredible time. We'll be thriving. We'll be like, ooh, summer.
And we said this to the patrons, but I'll say it here for you, general public. To the person who said you don't like our intros because they throw you off course, well,
what are you
too
talking
bad
about,
for you, girl?
This is peak entertainment.
This is peak entertainment. Yes, we know it's off topic. Yes, we know it's rambling. We're trying to get warmed up before we go balls deep into the subject at hand.
Yeah, and I would say in today's internet economy, you have to be able to give a little bit of personality, a little bit of yourself along with the information, and unfortunately our personalities right now are really sad.
Yeah, so take it or leave it, babe.
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Maya.
And this is Rehash, a podcast about the internet phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is about when art meets the internet. Is the sun rising on a new creative era, or did it set before it even began? If you like our show and want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast, where we have monthly bonus episodes, weekly mini episodes, and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us a lot.
So much.
So much. Maya.
Hannah.
Today we are going to discuss Wattpad, its online legacy, and the troubling aspirations of the people behind it. For the unaware, Wattpad is a massively popular self-publishing platform. It's home to original works, but also a lot of fan fiction. And because of its reputation for fan fiction, we also thought that this would be a great opportunity to interview someone who is very well-versed in this world. Our friend Princess Weeks.
Yay.
So throughout this episode, we're going to be cutting to our interview with Princess to get her insights. But first, I'll let her introduce herself.
We're here. Yay.
And on that note, would you like to introduce yourself?
My name is Princess Weeks. I am a YouTuber, writer, yapper, and I'm just so happy to be talking on one of my favorite podcasts. Honestly, you guys slay. I'm thrilled.
Oh God, we're going to have to put that on our promotional. Like,
just slay. Slay.
Just weeks. Princess is a legend and an icon of the niche world of YouTube film and pop culture video essays. And I was a huge fan of your work before I started making my own YouTube videos. So this to me is a momentous day.
Truly.
My history with fan fiction is pretty brief, but it's something I'm fascinated about. So I'm very excited to have you on as sort of an expert opinion on the matter. So thank you for coming on.
I love fan fiction, unfortunately. Not unfortunately, but I do love it and I love talking about it. And I think that we are in this really interesting space where fan fiction is fully mainstream now. And I think that there's a lot of good in that can come out of it. But we're also dealing with, especially with AI, a lot of what does it mean to have that much material for public consumption? Who's getting paid? You know, what is the audience asking for? It's a big intersectional topic when you get into the weeds of it. So I'm excited.
Do you want to give us like a brief history of your relationship with fan fiction?
So I really got into it when I realized, so I've always been into anime growing up, and in the era that I grew up in, when there were dubs of an anime, a lot of the queer content would be cut out of it, or sometimes more explicit things. So infamously, people who grew up watching Sailor Moon remember that the two lesbian characters, Sailor Uranus and Neptune, were turned into cousins in the dub of it. So you have these very intimate, like, moments where they're like holding hands like this, and I'm like, I've never done that with my cousin before ever in my life. And then like you went online and you were like, oh, they're actually a couple. And it's like, oh, there's different canons going on. And so through that, I found fan fiction with those two women together that people had written. And so I just, whenever there's a couple I liked on a show, I'd be like, what are the people writing about it? And then I would just keep doing that of like getting my jollies off of that. And then when the couple I like didn't end up together, I definitely would go and figure out like, okay, but what are the people thinking? Like, what's actually happening? And so it became, when I was younger, it was just a way of like enjoying different relationships. As I've gotten older, especially in times where I've been like really depressed, it's actually been a very sex positive space for me. I think because a lot of the people who write fanfiction tend to lean queer and tend to lean female and femme, there's a lot of exploration of kink and BDSM and like those kind of things in a very safe way. And especially on places like AO3 where people over tag for good reasons, that I have found it being a really fun place to like think about, do I like this? Do I like that? And just seeing what people are thinking about. I think now, especially with already existing IP, it's a really fun way of going into the niches of different stories. So I love that about fan fiction.
I love that like, we're just gonna, why couldn't they just be friends? They had to be cousins. Like,
yeah, they had, I know, it was because they were always together and they were always in the same house because they were dating, and they're like, but they don't look alike, so we're gonna have
them. And they were roommates.
And they were literally, they were like, no, they have to create cousins because they would die for each other and you wouldn't just die for your friend, even though that's the premise of the whole show. But
no,
yeah, it's crazy.
No, it's way more appropriate to have those kinds of feelings for your cousin than another woman.
Everyone knows that incest is definitely more okay than being gay. Like, come on.
We're going to take that as a soundbite and send it to you.
Yeah. And end of interview.
Right. This is my hard. This is my hard launch into, like, I'm actually straight. Surprise.
So, Maya, I'll be honest. Hannah. I'll be honest. I'm a little nervous to be covering a topic related to literature.
Why? Whatever for, Hannah?
Well, because I've always found people who consider themselves, like, readers to be, like, very intense about reading. They're kind of intimidating, I think. And perhaps this is my own insecurities, but I think that there's a bit of a reputation for people to, like, make books, like, part of their identity. Like, if you're, like, a prolific reader, like, that's who you are. Like, yeah. In school, the kids that were always reading Harry Potter at recess were the meanest kids.
What? Whoa, I do not have this experience.
Well, maybe nerds just hate me.
I think I was so just, cool maybe I was a nerd. Yeah, maybe you were just jealous of you because you're so cool and hot.
Yeah, that's it. No, but I don't know. I've always felt like it's a place of insecurity, I don't know, for most people.
I guess so. I mean, I haven't really come into contact with that very much. I mean, I guess I just, like, was a book nerd growing up, but, like, I lost my love for reading in university because there were so many, like, I was just doing it for school, and so I just didn't do it recreationally, and I think that's where a lot of people kept going, and then I've, you know, yeah, I think in the past couple of years I was like, oh shit, like, I feel kind of like I've fallen behind, or, like, I could never know, like, I think there's a level of imposter syndrome maybe with it, mm-hmm. where I was like, I could never know all there is to know, I need to know, like, all the best authors, all the best books, I am in the process of trying to, like, catch up, basically, and, like, I've been reading a lot more recently, and I feel good about it. That makes me sad that you feel that way. But I understand why you feel that way. I think we also run in circles of people who are, like, very into the literary scene. And I think it's also become a bit of a scene, which is tough to grapple with as well. But I just love reading.
Well, then, so I'm happy you kind of, like, brought up your reading habits a bit, because I thought, because this episode's going to, like, touch on a bit of, like, contentious topics within the world of reading, that it'd be good for us to kind of, like, share a bit more about us as readers and our personal habits. Mm-hmm. So you expressed, you know, being a bookish kid, reading more in university, and now, like, trying to get back to that place. I'm kind of, like, in a similar vein. I did read a lot as a kid. I was reading from an early age. By the time I got to, like, my teen years, like, I have ADHD, and it is genuinely a thing that has gotten in the way of my ability to read. I'm someone who has to, like, go back and reread, like, a single paragraph, like, multiple times sometimes because I get distracted. But I've always loved reading. I've always enjoyed reading, and it's always been something I wish that I could get myself to do more of. And I'm currently making a conscious effort of that. But, like, I realized recently that a lot of the reading I end up doing is nonfiction reading, typically for research purposes. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get back into fiction again. Trying to lean into, like, summer reads. I just read Emma Klein's The Guest. And now I'm finally reading The Great Gatsby, because I pretended to read it in high school. And I was like, I think I would really like this book, and then never read it. And I'm loving it.
And it's so goddamn good. Yeah. It's so well written and so, like, digestible. It's very easy to read. It's quick. It's, yeah, I love The Great Gatsby. Yeah, I've kind of gotten into a funny place where it's like, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I'll, like, listen to them while I'm cooking, or I'll listen to them while I'm cleaning mostly. And it's been really good to be, like, consuming more literature. Like, I think audiobooks are amazing for that, and, like, it gets people more into reading. But I am feeling a bit like, oh, I'm missing a lot of the, almost like the texture to a novel when I listen to it instead of read it. Or, like, it's also being kind of interpreted for you in the way that it's read, like, all this stuff. So I feel like I would like to start reading physical books more. And, like, I do read physical books as well, but I find it hard to, yeah, pay attention to them. The place I find that my attention span has, like, died out over the years is when I sit down with, like, a physical book. Like, it's so frustrating. But I've been really trying to force myself to, like, every evening go and sit in the park and, like, read for an hour.
And I can confirm she does do this.
Thank you so much. Right now I'm reading a book called Seduction and Betrayal by Elizabeth Hardwick, because I've been trying to read a lot more nonfiction recreationally, because I'm really interested in writing my own creative nonfiction. So
it's more for like practice with that. I find when I'm reading a lot, the better I am at writing. So like that's also something. I think with most art forms, yeah, it's like the more you're engaging with that art, the better you're going to be at making it, I think.
I find even if I'm like reading something and the narration is like really distinct or there's just like a really strong point of view, I start like thinking to myself, I'll like start narrating things in that way, like stylistically. Like it just gets your brain working a certain way.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. I think that's been really nice and partly why I've been forcing myself to read more. I hate that I have to force myself to do it, but I just think when you're like an adult, it's hard to kind of find the time.
I think that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think there are people who reading is in their routine and so they're doing it, but if it just has fallen out of that routine, then it is something you have to remind yourself of. And then it feels so good when you do it.
I think the effort is so important. I think most people should try and just make the effort, even if they can't commit to it for like that much of the day. It's like just the effort of like attempting it is nice. I think this pairs really well with our last episode about Rupee Kaur and just like giving something time to kind of like sit with it and engage with it. Yeah. And then I'm listening to an audiobook of Jonathan Franzen's Freedom, which is like a massive book, so the audiobook is like 24 hours, but it's so engaging, it's so good. I think it's being adapted into a TV series soon, so.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so that's me, that's where I'm at right now.
Okay, well thank you for sharing. Then like, do you agree that there's like a shame and stigma wrapped up in reading, or like what are your like feelings about that?
I think a lot of shame and stigma with art is like a bit self-inflicted. Like I think a lot of it is like someone feeling down on themselves that they haven't consumed something, or that they haven't engaged enough with it, or that they haven't, they don't feel like they have the skills to, you know what I mean? I think a lot of it's self-inflicted, whereas within like even just the writing community, I'm constantly like, well, I don't read enough to be able to like call myself a writer, you know what I mean? Like it's so hard to be able to call myself a writer when I'm not as engaged with the act of reading as other people I know. But then I'll talk to those people about that feeling and they'll be like, what are you talking about? Like, you don't have to. So I think a lot of it is just my internal comparison to those people and feeling like I'm not measuring up to them. But I'm trying to use that as an impetus to like want to challenge myself more and want to catch up with my own brain, you know what I mean? I'm sure, yeah, definitely there's like a stigma in terms of some people also have like learning disabilities where it's hard for them to read. So it's not across the board. Everyone can easily just like sit down and read a book. Like you're saying, even with ADHD, for example, it's like difficult to like sit down and actually be able to consume literature as much as other people are.
I read at an astonishingly slower rate. Like if you go to an art gallery with me, because I like to read all the kind of artist statements and everything, you'll be lapping me.
Oh, we've gone to many art galleries together.
Yeah, and you've experienced that. I am a very slow reader.
Which is fine. I think everyone should engage with it. I just think as long as someone's engaging with it, it's important. This is so funny in conversation with the Rupee Kaur thing. I think these are two kind of different ideas, but like...
Sister episodes. They're sisters, not twins.
Sisters, not twins. Like your eyebrows. I don't know if anyone understood that, but you get what I mean. Yeah.
There's always been a bit of a debate over... not just whether or not people read, but like the kinds of reading that should be encouraged or that are done. And I do think that like I've been noticing it become even more of a thing in like the age of social media. You know, I've seen a lot of arguments on Twitter about whether listening to audiobooks constitutes as reading.
Totally, yeah.
Which, you know, I don't even know what my stance is on the matter. Like you are consuming the work by listening, but it obviously literally isn't reading.
Yeah.
How do you understand that? You know, romance books are having a big surge in popularity online, and there's this debate about folks who read them for their spice, aka like the sex content, and you know, whether or not that constitutes as porn or invalidates people's interest in reading it. And Princess Weeks actually has a really great video that touches on this that you should all check out. Mm-hmm. We'll link it. And then there's also like Book Talk and, you know, whether it has aestheticized reading, whether or not we're all reading the same 20 books because they're being
pushed to us by influencers.
Yeah. And like, you know, the list goes on. Like there's just...
and even the personality thing you're talking about, turning books into like a facet of your identity has become such a like aestheticized thing on Book Talk, for example. Like being a girl who reads Otessa Moshfegh versus being a girl who reads Colleen Hoover. It just changes the way we like engage with books.
I can't remember where I saw this, but someone was talking about celebrities having book stylists, because I think, you know, right now it's very chic to be like, I read Kaia Gerber's like look books. Dua Lipa has a book club.
Mm-hmm.
Bella Hadid keeps being photographed with different books. Like it's, you know, and I'm sure that they do read a bit, but I think it's like become part of an image thing right now.
It's so dystopian. There's a really good article by this writer named Barry Pierce
I think it's for GQ, but he talks about how, like, reading has become more of an act of consumerism. Like, book hauls, for example, on BookTok, or, yeah, like, turning it into an aesthetic thing versus a thing you do in your own private time to soothe yourself, like, or to engage with something in an interesting way or to learn something. It's not really about that as much. Or at least that's how BookTok makes it out to be.
Well, it's like, yeah, you're reading something because you're supposed to be like, I read that. Or yeah, you want to be seen with it. One time we were walking through the park in our neighborhood years ago. And there was a guy sitting under a tree reading Howl out loud to himself.
I saw the minds of my generation.
I feel like we've maybe starving. Brought this
up I think we before, have.
But it was just like, whether or not he was reading the book earnestly, it just felt like such a performance of reading it.
It was an integral moment in our friendship because we were both like, lol.
But yeah, I would say, you know, within these debates, there's always this argument against the criticisms that tends to be something of like, well, we should be happy that people are reading it all. You know, we should be just happy for literacy, like literacy for literacy's sake.
Similar to the Rupi Kaur.
Yeah, defense. Exactly. Yeah. And this sort of leads us into talking about Wattpad, because I think a lot of the success of it as a company, especially as of late, can be partially attributed to that sentiment. So Wattpad is a Toronto-based company, which I was shocked to learn.
We are weirdly like the nexus of so many different tech innovation. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I feel like we are home to a lot of these origin stories.
Yeah, well, within Canada, it's like the likelihood of a tech thing coming out of anywhere but Toronto feels slim.
Why? You don't mean Regina, Saskatchewan?
Yeah.
As a tech bubble?
Well, they are like Silicon Valley 2.0, but it's still on the rise.
I love you guys over there in Regina.
Shout out. So it launches in 2006 after co-founders Alan Lau and Ivan Yun realized that they've been like simultaneously working on prototypes for apps that would basically use mobile gaming technology to allow users to read on their phones. Lau at this point already has two other companies under his belt, and one of them is a wireless gaming company, which is how they met. But he's like, I don't want to play games on my phone. I want to read on my phone. That would be useful. So they're both working on these prototypes, realize that they're both working on it at the same time, have this meeting at the Vancouver airport for some reason, and get to work on Wattpad. Their design for Wattpad includes a website where users can upload reading material, which they can then access from their phones. And like, the idea is inspired by the user-generated model of YouTube. So it's, you know, people write their own stuff, they put it up there, other people consume it. Obviously, they can't, like, afford to put non-public domain books up on there, but then they also get a bunch of public domain works as well. It takes quite a while for Wattpad to, like, land on its feet, but when it does, it really does. And this comes with, like, the more widespread ownership of the iPhone.
Mm.
And so Wattpad soon develops a reputation as a site and an app where teenage girls can go to read and write self-published works, a lot of which is fan fiction or romance. Their audience base starts really young. And while no one really makes an argument on behalf of the quality of the work that you would find on Wattpad, it does go back to this argument where people are, you know, praising the platform for encouraging young people to read and write online at all. And one of its early advocates is actually Margaret Atwood.
Oh, I remember hearing about this.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she judges the site's poetry competition in 2012, and people are critical of that. And so she pens an op-ed for The Guardian defending her decision. She praises Wattpad's potential for basically offering writers anonymity, which allows them to explore without like the shame of having it attached to their names as they're developing their crafts. She also says that it's participation mode. Basically, when you use Wattpad, like, you can upload something and people can comment on individual paragraphs. Like, there's a really like call and response nature to it. Like, people are interacting with it as they read. And she says that like this model emulates video games and thus, you know, makes it a more enticing reading experience for teens who might otherwise just be gaming.
Interesting.
And, you know, that the internet generally encourages literacy because you have to be literate to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be able to read things online. Yeah. What are your thoughts on these arguments?
I mean, the gaming origins is really interesting because I remember when I was talking to Funke in our Gamergate episode, like they were really emphasizing the importance of like the interactivity element of video games and like the ability to kind of choose where a game will go, like all this stuff. And I think you can see that influence in the way that people are being able to kind of interact with and like influence almost like the course of the creation of a novel, which is so interesting. It's almost like we can't be like passive spectators anymore. Like we want, because of the age that we're in, like we want to be the active participant in the art that we're consuming, which I think is fascinating to me.
Well, yeah, and it sort of dilutes the idea of authorship too.
Yeah.
Because it isn't a representation of like somebody's ideas or thinking or like plans. Like it's more their way of representing what other people want from them.
Well, yeah, it makes me think about what we were talking about with the Ruby Core episode and the convergence online of like artist and audience and how they're kind of almost becoming one. And I think this is similar to that.
Yes, absolutely. And Margaret Atwood finishes off her op-ed by basically saying that Wattpad and sites like it will not replace publishers, but by encouraging writers to hone their skills will lead people to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say she was half right. Wattpad has led people to publishers, and you know, we're going to get into that a bit more later, but there's a debate over whether it's actually helping people improve their writing skills.
Whatever do you mean?
Well, I think the easiest way to kind of illustrate this is to take a look at one of the most popular Wattpad exports, which is After.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about After?
So I know that it's a Harry Styles fan fiction. I know that Dylan Sprouse was inexplicably in the movie series. I know that it became a really bad and bloated movie series. And from what I remember, the characterization of Harry Styles is like extremely bizarre. Like, he kind of is representative of like a larger trend within Wattpad of creating these male characters and these male love interests who are like super abusive and like aggressive and toxic and mean-spirited, and you can't find a single redeeming quality about them other than their looks. And I think that's kind of how they characterize poor Harry Styles, which is fascinating.
Yeah. After is a series of Harry Styles fanfiction, that's right, published to Wattpad by writer Anna Todd under the username Imaginator1D. And it's under this subsection of like One Direction fanfiction that is called Punk Harry Styles. And it's just where he's imagined, yes, as this like tattooed bad boy. And the character of Harry Styles within After doesn't really seem to be based on, I don't know, what we understand Harry Styles' real personality, or at least public facing personality, to be.
Yeah.
But more so just this idea that he had tattoos.
Yeah.
And the stories, they follow the romantic and sexual awakening of this girl named Tessa, who goes off to college and meets Harry Styles, and they enter this like tumultuous relationship. So yeah, when After was written by Anna Todd, and when she began writing the series, she was a 24-year-old new mother who would basically already burned through all the One Direction fan fiction.
Wow, I did not realize this. Okay. I thought she was a teenager.
No. She wasn't a teenager, but she certainly wasn't like a professional writer by any means.
Not a teenager, not yet Club Chalamet.
Well, there you go. Exactly. So once she'd like read all this One Direction fan fiction, she decided to write her own. And she would basically write it from her phone, like throughout the day. Often like, you know, she says she'd write it in line at Target or like while she's running errands. And her husband didn't know she was writing Harry Styles fan fiction. He thought she was just like addicted to her phone.
Okay. And she is a single mom who works three jobs, and she's finding time to write literature in the line at Target.
Yes.
Honestly, that's kind of awesome.
And I think one of the reasons she had the time to write this is because when I say she was writing from her phone, I mean she was basically like typing it out on her phone and like immediately posting, no read throughs, no copy editing. Have you read any of After?
Not After, no, but I've been privy to other types of fanfiction that are created in a similar way. Most of my experience with fanfiction is like through YouTube videos about fanfiction. And so I think Sarah Zed, the YouTuber, has a video about My Immortal. And I remember that like the creation of that was very piecemeal. Like, it would come out in tiny bits, but then it would be, like, really unedited, like, lots of typos. And there's something, like, oddly beautiful to that, but, like, hilarious once we start measuring it up to whether or not it's literature. But I think it's, like, kind of fascinating.
Is it not stream of consciousness in the style of Jack Kerouac?
I would say it's stream of consciousness in the style of, like, Baby Reindeer. But, yes.
And so, like, that's a lot of the kind of stuff that is being published on sites like this. And it's typically for an audience of readers who are totally okay with that, totally taking it at face value. But after it blows up on the site, it becomes a hugely popular series. And after that happens, Wattpad helps Anna get in touch with publishers. And the stories are then subsequently published into a series of 4 books. And then later adapted into a film series.
God, that is the most beautiful version of stumbling up I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it's technically a Cinderella story. You know, Anna Todd, she grew up poor with a troubled home life, but then, you know, her life changed overnight because of the help of this exciting new platform. And I think that these kinds of narratives really helped with Wattpad's branding itself as a democratizing force in the publishing industry, which, as we talked about in our RubyCore episode, democratization within the arts can be sort of like a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, Wattpad was really touting itself as being a place where people who are typically overlooked by, like, the gatekeepers of the publishing industry can find their audience. And, you know, you've broken into an industry, a sort of niche profession, through unconventional means via the power of the internet. I'm sure that this is something you can get behind in theory.
I can get behind it in theory. I'm kind of reticent to be like, and I'm on the same level as, like, a film critic who's been working in the, you know, it's, like, hard for me to even measure myself up in that way because, you know, yeah, I did skip a lot of, like, the barriers that someone might have. And, like, sometimes I don't know how to explain it. Like, I just think skipping the barriers is great and all, but also, like, sometimes then it becomes harder to measure whether or not you were, like, good enough to pass those barriers in the first place. And, like, I am constantly wondering that about myself, and I'm, like, fine with being critical of that. And, like, I think it's okay. I think a degree of self-skepticism is always important. So I think it's great, and I can never harp on it too much. But
then that is kind of the golden question, which is, what if the work that's surpassing the gatekeepers is bad?
Well, but yes. And I think my YouTube channel is evidence of that enough. I'm kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly what I was thinking of. But no, I mean, in the case of Wattpad, at least with the really popular stuff that has broken through on the site, you know, the stuff that's been adapted into other works and that has, like, found an audience outside of this platform, there are a lot of works that are not bad in the sense that, like, it's not my taste or it's not trying to be high art.
Like not bad in the sense of, like, oh, people hating on RubyCore.
Yeah. It's, like, actually just bad.
Mm.
And, you know, After has really devoted fans. I've watched really cute YouTube videos of, like, girls talking about the books and how much they love the books and, like, what they do for them. If you go on their Goodreads, you have people making really passionate defenses of the books because they feel represented by the relationship or by certain character types, or they like that, you know, people are imperfect or whatever that they see in the books. And, like, I think that there is a lot to get from maybe the content of it for some people, but I've yet to actually come across a defense of the actual writing.
I'm starting to wonder, like, if as a kid we were able to be critical of the stuff we were reading or watching. Like, I'm trying to wonder if, like, I ever watched something where I was like, that's badly made as a kid.
I'm trying to remember. There is a movie, and I remember it being the first movie where I was like, oh, this blows.
The only one that's, like, in memory that I remember being, like, angry at because I thought it was so poorly made was Snow White and the Huntsman, but I was in high school at that point. But I remember, like, walking out halfway through because I was like, this shit stinks.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I remember being a kid, and when I decided to get off the Harry Potter bandwagon because I was like, this isn't for me anymore, but it wasn't really about quality so much as it was, you know, me going, you know what? I'm not going to do your hive mind thinking. I'm not enjoying this shit anymore.
You saw the future and you knew what JK was capable of, and you said, not for me.
I said, I'm an ally.
Yeah.
No, I just thought it was too scary, and I was like, nar. I think to illustrate this, I'm going to read you a little bit of an excerpt from After, and I'm not trying to harp on After too much. I just think that it really well, like, illustrates the points I'm trying to make.
And it's such a popular piece of writing that we have to kind of use it as an example.
And Anna Todd is very rich. She will be fine. So to set the scene, Tessa is in her new dorm room at the university, and she's just been dropped off by her mom and her boyfriend, and her new roommate is kind of a rebel rocker chick, and she's feeling overwhelmed by it. So, feeling exhausted, I lay across the bed. Loneliness is always creeping its way into me, and it doesn't help that my roommate is gone, no matter how uncomfortable her friends make me. I have a feeling she will be gone a lot, or worse, she may have company over too often. Why couldn't I get a roommate who loved to stay in and read or study? I suppose it could be a good thing, because I have the small room to myself. So far, college isn't what I had dreamed of, nor expected, but it's only been a few hours. Tomorrow will be better. It has to be.
And is she wrong?
And is she wrong?
She is committing that cardinal sin of book stigma shame that you were talking about. Maybe you just read a lot of YA growing up with these YN characters hating on girls who don't read books.
Well, I gotta say, one thing that, like, I always found unrelatable about girls and books is that they're always reading. And I'm like, okay, have another interest. But then I guess the people writing them are always reading. And so, yeah, that's a small excerpt from After. And of course, it's just one piece of writing on a platform with millions of stories. But the impression I've gotten in researching this episode is that within even the realm of, like, online self-published fictions, the bar for quality for Wattpad is significantly lower. I had asked Princess Weeks what her impression of this was, and this is what she had to say.
Historically, like, where have you consumed your fanfiction? I know you mentioned Archive of Our Own. Mm-hmm. Is that typically where you go?
Yeah, growing up, it was definitely fanfiction.net. My mother, she raised me. And then there was also adultfanfiction.net, which is where, like, if you were really spicy, if you were really trying to do some shit, that's where it would live. And that was, like, its own, like, thing, which I think nowadays, because on fanfiction.net, it was general through mature. So on AO3, you have explicit now. And I think that would have been where the adult fanfiction was. So, like, back in the old days. But now I'm AO3'd up. I really do like their interface.
Wattpad seems to have developed this reputation for having a disparity in quality compared to these other sites. Do you get that impression at all?
I think because of my age, I'm only 32, but still, I remember when the After books, which were originally on Wattpad, were published. And I think that created a shift because self-insert fan fiction or, like, character versus reader has always been kind of seen as sort of a little faux pas because a lot of it is dealing with real people. And there's kind of this idea of, like, of overly commodifying people that you would feel uncomfortable with. So there was a little bit of that. And I think just the idea that someone was, like, publishing One Direction fan fiction, which is kind of, why would you do that? like, it was just seen as very, like, farcical. And I think a lot of people would agree it's just also just not good. And so it was just kind of like, it was just a weird thing to have, like, something that was super popular, but also not really, it wasn't well written. It was very abusive in the nature of the relationship as well. It was very, like, aggressive, hypersexual man with virginal, innocent young woman. And I think we see that happen so often where, like, the big popular thing of content that's been, like, promoted by women ends up being something where it's, like, kind of, like, weirdly sexual politics, like, really heteronormative in that way. And most fanfiction is not that. You know, most fanfiction is very queer. Like, if you look at the top relationships on these sites, it's all MM. You know, it's all two guys. And I think there's so little of that that you see get picked up in the mainstream that it becomes almost not really an accurate look of what fanfiction is like. I believe on the last chart that was on Archive of Our Own, it was like 7 or 10 things down before you got the first heterosexual popular couple on the listing. So it's weird that a lot of straight couples end up being, or like straight stories end up being the ones that get published and then get all the attention. But I think because Wattpad is also known for, like, original fiction as well, that it also has its different kind of audience. So you have people who are trying to, like, maybe to something that could have been fan fiction, or but are like testing it out there. Something that you would have seen done on like LiveJournal, because LiveJournal used to have like a little communities where you could just all share like original fiction together. So I think Wattpad serves two purposes in that way, because it has a big original fiction place versus like an AO3 where it is all fan fiction, even if they have original characters in it.
You know, I see a lot of people defending Wattpad on the grounds that it like encourages a lot of young people to read, a lot of young women specifically to read. But, in looking at the quality of some of the popular things published on that site and like looking at the repetitive nature, the archetypal nature of everything, do you think that there is like a downside to that, even if it's pro-literacy, quote unquote?
You know, I think two things can be true at the same time, you know, not to be a cop out, but I think that the works that you see on Wattpad, like getting the encouragement to like write and having, you know, people give you feedback right away for your work is a really good tool to use in terms of understanding your craft. And also a part of it is like when you make the sphere change from publishing online to like mass production, which after God, I think they should invest in having real editors there that are going to actually push you as a writer to make the best product possible. I think that a part of it is the capitalism of the industry seeing something that it can latch onto and take advantage. And they're doing a disservice to these young authors because they're not getting the actual help that they would get from like peers. Because who are their peers now? It's not going to be, it's other people who've come up the same way and haven't had that same experience of having like thoroughly edited and thoroughly vetted, having pushback. You know, I was just at my Lindsay Ellis, I was just at her book signing in Asheville, and she was talking about, you know, like when you start writing your first draft, it's supposed to be in many ways very different at the end of it. But in a lot of ways, they're just taking the first draft that someone did and just making it into a thing because the audience is there. And so in that way, it's a capitalist problem.
I know that's right.
And I also want to just prove that I'm not like a snob with a bias against fan fiction kind of coming into this. So I did read a little bit of a very popular fan fiction on the platform Archive of Our Own, which fan fiction heads seem to regard as like higher brow than Wattpad. This is a really popular Harry Potter prequel fan fiction called All the Young Dudes that went viral on TikTok. And I just expressed, not the biggest like Potter head, but I found it like engrossing and like well written. And I read a few chapters of it and I was like, someone's actually putting their pussy into this, you know?
And that's how I measure my literature.
Well, I think, you know,
did he put his pussy into it? Did he?
I think that like there can be a knee-jerk reaction for people outside of the world of fan fiction to look at the afters and go, oh, it's all like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or to just like have this immediate stigma. And I think there is like a spectrum of quality coming out of it, is all to say.
I am a snob, but I will also agree that I think that there is some well-written fan fiction out there. I think I probably engaged in some One Direction fan fiction back in my dark ages, but other than that, not really.
We did also both watch The Idea of You, which isn't technically like explicit fan fiction, but is basically...
No, I think, okay, this is, maybe I'm going to make a video about The Idea of You next month.
It's basically One Direction fan fiction.
People are calling it One Direction fan fiction, but I think that's doing a disservice to the movie because the movie was just inspired by the idea of Harry Styles, but it's not
the
like,
idea of him.
The idea of him, but it's not like a One Direction fan fiction. And I think some people are like, I wrote like a positive review of it for Letterboxd and people were like, girl, like you're so incorrect. They were like, this is fan fiction smut. And I was like, no, it's not. Like, it's not really fan fiction. It's a movie that's like inspired by Harry Styles.
I would say it is more inspired by Harry Styles than After is.
It's more literal. Like, it's a woman who meets like a boy band member, but it could also be like any boy, you know.
It wasn't written as fan fiction, yeah. But I think...
Not with the intent of being fan fiction, like, and it didn't come up within those channels either.
But all I was saying is that I watched that and I thought it actually kind of slapped a little bit.
Oh, it slapped. And that's maybe next month is going to be an Idea of You video. Unfortunately, the two videos I've made defending movies that other people either like didn't like or didn't appreciate are about May December relationships.
Because
one of them being May December, and that wasn't actually really an appropriate relationship, obviously.
But in the Idea of You, it's just hot.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Whatever. It's the fluffy summer movie of the
summer.
It's
middle-aged lady smut. Like,
yeah. Have it. And he honestly delivers.
Anne Hathaway put her whole pussy into that one.
Hell yeah.
People are going to hate us for this take, but sorry. I feel what I feel. Grow up.
So yeah, like we said, there's a spectrum of quality with the stuff coming out. It would be fine to like accept that if things were going to be confined to internet self-publishing. But my concern is with the future plans of Wattpad, because they basically want to become the new Disney. And the publishing industry is so vulnerable right now that I'm actually scared it could happen.
Oh my god, everyone's got to be Disney. Everyone's got to do everything all at once. And it's like, can you not just be like a fan fiction website?
I think, you know, the prevailing lesson from this podcast is that we can't really trust people in STEM to be responsible for the arts.
Which we did get a lot of pushback for.
Which we got a lot of pushback for. But I'm going to say, if you are trying to be like a tech entrepreneur and you have somehow found yourself in a position of power within like the world of an art form, like I don't trust you to not like get hubristic on us and to focus on the bottom line and growth over like actually bettering.
And more than STEM, it's like just capitalism, and the long arm of capitalism is strong and compelling.
But I think that these little like tech developers,
totally,
like these guys developed an app to read on your phone. That's a cute, fun idea. And yeah, like they just couldn't let it.
But capitalism also really pushes for diversification, right? So I think that's also another element of it.
So in a 2016 blog post celebrating Wattpad's 10-year anniversary, CEO Alan Lowe shared his plans for world domination, basically. He basically wants to elevate Wattpad from an app or community into a global multi-platform entertainment company.
God.
By using machine learning and data to determine which books published to Wattpad will be hits and streamline them towards novelization and adaptation.
Fuck this fucking guy.
Yeah. Yeah. In the years since, they've been using AI to help them shortlist works for their editorial team to publish under Wattpad Books. Can you think of any negative outcomes that could arise from this?
Well, like, one, AI is going to have, like, a bias as to which books are getting favorable reviews and which ones aren't. And, like, what are the qualifications and judgments of AI towards literature?
On Wattpad.
On too. Wattpad. Already Wattpad. It's given birth to like so many bizarre trends in narrative storytelling, and like I think this is just gonna like really entrench those trends. It's also gonna make people write to be seen, right? And write to hit the algorithm. And like we were saying with the Rupi Kaur stuff, making these poems that are like visually dynamic and, you know, appealing to Instagram and going viral, you'd see the same thing with this, but in like long form formats, which is like, it'll be fascinating to see what comes out of it. But like, I'm concerned to know what people are going to be trying to hit, like what kind of markers, if they're going to try and use certain buzzwords that they think the algorithm will pick up. Like, very interesting.
Well, no, exactly. Like, AI has to be trained. The material it's being trained with is the material published on Wattpad. It's being trained to look for things that will be hits, so it's being trained with the things that were hits on Wattpad. And what do we know about the works that were hits on Wattpad? They're perhaps not amazing.
I was curious about your feelings about, like, monetizing fan fiction generally. Like, do you have any strong feelings about it?
I'm really opposed to it because it puts fan fiction already exists in a very like legally gray space, because technically it's copyrighted material that people are working with. And there was a big issue that was fairly recent of people binding and selling fan fiction on places like Etsy for like hundreds of dollars. Like this very popular Jermaine fan fiction, Manacled, people were like selling it for like hundreds of dollars. And it's like, guys, you cannot do that, because not only are you putting, not is it illegal because it's based on the turf books, but also the fact that like the writer of that work themselves is not getting paid for that work. They have no legal recourse because, again, it's owned by Turf Rolling. So like that led to a lot of people in that particular community taking their stuff off AO3 and off public spaces because they have no legal recourse if someone takes their work. And that's such a very shitty thing to do, to have people like build these communities and build these like small fan canons together. And then because of like a desire to commodify this thing, everyone loses out on it. And it was a really strange thing to see the entitlement that people had towards it, towards this thing that like people were doing for fun. And I think that's kind of the thing that happens when you see fan fiction being commodified in that way, is that the fun of it gets lost, because now everyone wants to treat it as though like updates instantaneously. There's a whole thing of like people don't want to read works in progress because they want to read a completed work and get their whole entertainment out of it. But part of the joy of writing it is that back and forth between you and the audience. Like, how can you grow if you don't get critiqued throughout the process or get that feedback throughout the process? And they only want to wait till it's done, because then you might lose momentum. And so I think that was a big thing that I've been seeing, as well as like people trying to monetize it, but also treating it as if the people writing it are professional writers and not just people trying to enjoy themselves online.
That makes me think a lot about like the nature of fan fiction and just how symbiotic it's, like how the symbiosis is kind of built into it. Like it's like the audience mm-hmm. having a relationship to the original author, and then another audience having a relationship to the new author, like the fan fiction author. And it, yeah, it's just like so like community focused, which is like just built into the design of it, which I think is so beautiful. And yeah, then it makes me kind of question the way we consume literature and the way that, yeah, the audience doesn't really get to respond, which in many ways right. is a good thing, but also
yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. maybe that is the beauty of the separate thing that is fan fiction.
Where do you think that social reading and writing and like that kind of engagement with literature like turns into a negative thing? Or do you think it does at all?
Oh, it definitely turns into a negative thing. I think I got like chills thinking about that, because I think if Wattpad wants to open an imprint and be an actual publishing house that pays people for their work, pays editors, that's a great idea. Like, let's democratize that more. You know, the publishing houses are already very conglomerate-y. That would be great. But that's not what they're doing. Because now you're asking audiences who have a range of literary background to like go and hyper niche these people's writing that they may not have asked for. So it's like, can you cop in and out of that? But also just, I think that we, and I'm sure you guys have seen this way, that the puritanical way that some people are about art. I can't imagine like wanting to write something that requires a lot of nuanced depth and having any person, as I'm just working through the first step of that process, come through and be like, this is implying this, this is implying that. Like, not critiquing grammar, but trying to turn my art into something that it isn't.
Again, lots of crappy books are published every year. Like, that is fine. It's not to say that like it's going to necessarily make all of the book world have the quality of Wattpad, but I think that they have perhaps the money and the power and the popularity amongst like a certain demographic that we know can be like a lucrative one, which is like young people, young women, that they could be lowering the general standards. And, you know, when we were of that demographic, like, we were obsessed with Twilight. It's not like we had really high bars.
Hey, that shit is good.
Look, I got what I needed to get out of Twilight, but, like...
Yeah, no, it's not great. I actually tried to reread it. I remember, like, I read it in, like, 3 seconds, and then I tried to reread it in, like... I read it first in grade 7, then I tried again in grade 9, and I was like, I can't read this shit. It'll always have a large place in my heart. But no, it's not great.
No, like, my love for it comes from mostly a nostalgic standpoint.
Okay, and that first film is a masterpiece, oh, sorry.
I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about the books. Not to say that, you know, young women and young women audiences have low standards about what they'll read, but I just think that at the age that, like, these books are being marketed to, I think that there are certain things you're looking for in what you read over other things. They tend to be certain types of romances, certain tropes, like certain boxes being hit. I think before you've really developed your sense of like literary criticism.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just worried about like the power that people like this can have in then diluting, like, I don't know, the quality of work consumed by young people. And setting up future reading habits.
It's kind of how I feel about
kids' TV shows and the way that like so many kids now watch their TV on YouTube. I think I've maybe talked about this again. I don't remember anymore what I've said in past episodes, but like, you know, like I'll see sometimes what my nephew happens to be watching and it'll be like some guy with like a toy, some man hands like making a toy dinosaur run around this like piece of astroturf. And I'm like, okay, I know this is for kids and I know kid shows are for kids, but like kid shows are created with the intention of like, you know, educating the children, helping them learn like basic skills, helping them get in touch with basic emotions or like understand more complicated emotions. They're developed for kids at certain ages. They elevate based on how old the kid is and how much older they're getting, like all this stuff. And I think with the YouTube stuff, it's like, oh, that's garbage, you know, like that has no educational value, that has no emotional value, it has nothing, it's just like a distraction. And I think in a similar way, thinking about like children's literature, yeah, some of it's silly and of course it's for children so it's like easy to read, but it's like at least it has baked into it these like emotional themes and these like educational themes. Same for YA literature. Some of it's garb, but like, you know, The Hunger Games, for example, does teach kids about these like dystopian topics that it's like an entry level thing for them to then later understand
politics,
you know, like certain things like that that I think, you know, Wattpad sometimes might not be being able to provide.
Yeah, and this kind of leads into something we had asked Princess Weeks about.
Where it comes to, like, the readership itself, I definitely think that, how do I put this away? Like, reading is not inherently an intellectual pursuit unless you're reading to learn, you know? And I think that there's room for fluff. I think that what is troubling, that I think romance as a genre should be taken seriously. I think that romance and young adult, all those things should be taken seriously because work is being put into it. They're very profitable and they have audiences that matter. I do think in the same token that the same people who consume that and want to be taken seriously are very opposed to the pushback that happens when we talk about sort of like heteronormative politics or race or body diversity. You know, like I think that as soon as you actually treat it seriously, there is a section of that audience that's like, but wait, we were just trying to have vibes and chill. And I think that's sort of the disconnect, especially in a space now when we think about like book talk, where like anyone can do that. You know, you don't have to be necessarily I hate to even say well-read person, but like you don't have to have quality control. You could just enjoy what it is, build an audience, and make a lot of money doing that. So there is no way to actually sit down and be like, well, who are the quality reviewers? Who are the people that we should trust? It really depends on if you like the same things or not. So it becomes like one big book club versus like an actual like review space. And I think that that's something that we're still kind of dealing with, especially because you want to be sensitive to the fact that people do hate stuff that young girls and women enjoy. That doesn't mean it is good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, it doesn't mean that it's good stuff.
I think we're finding that tension throughout this entire season is people being like, let people enjoy things or like stop hating on stuff that young women like. And then, but also kind of demanding more rigorous criticism of that stuff to treat it as a piece of art and like art with merit, right? I think that's kind of like the thrust of the season so far.
This kind of conundrum of how do we critique work? How do we critique the people putting the work out? Like not even just the creators, but the systems that are pushing that work and marketing it to young women and to these audiences without feeling like we're punching down. And also, you know, how do we challenge people without punching down? Because sometimes even those audiences, they're not above being challenged necessarily on the stuff that they like, but it doesn't mean that we should make it feel like it's rooted in the fact that it's made for that specific audience, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Like in my last Twilight video I did, part of the reason why I actually went through and reread all the books is because like I wanted to quote the text itself to prove the point, then extrapolate just my feelings. Because I think that a lot of Twilight fans, especially those who are around my age, because that's around the age that like Twilight really popped off, they know it's silly. They enjoy it. And I think they're now willing to do it because they've had a lot of space between it. And I think the movies themselves have their own cult of personality. But I think when you come into something with good faith of like, yes, I'm critiquing it, but I'm actually just using the books to make my point. I'm going to like bring in my little articles from JSTOR to be like, I'm not just saying this to be a hater. I'm saying this because we know that there are trends. And I think that doing that work, while it can be tedious at times, especially on YouTube, because you're going to get contrarians anyway that extrapolate whatever you say and what you didn't say. But I think it's valuable because then you're telling your audience, I'm not saying this to make fun of you for liking it. I'm talking about what this means in terms of the messages that it's inadvertently or inadvertently sending about sexuality, about race, about rape, about all of these different things and why they matter. And I think how it combines with something like fan fiction is that they probably started off doing that kind of work and like figuring out those kind of things. But again, if you're not having people really critique your work deeply, and sometimes it's not meant to be critiqued deeply, to be fair, because I think sometimes if you're writing a fan fiction, you're doing it for love of the game and not to like create a magnum opus. But it is just kind of like this very weird environment where you have a lot of women and femmes trying to explore different things. But because of commodification, it's hard to know how much critique is necessary sometimes.
And I wanted to pose the same question to you, which is, how do we critique an institution like Wattpad and the kind of work that come out of it without feeling like we're punching down then at the audiences?
I just think keeping it industry focused, I guess we did the same thing with RubyCore, right? Like questioning more why this is a phenomenon, like why this is a trend, what the like markers of the trend are and who is behind the trend, right? Like it's just a cornerstone of being able to critique the media we consume in general, but like, you know, understanding who's behind it, what their interests are, why we're seeing something that's more prevalent than others, like, you know, having those questions in mind, I think is important without being like, if you like this stuff, you're a dumbass, you know, like, obviously that's not productive for anyone. And like, we all consume our trash. Your trash is your trash. My trash is my trash. Princess Weeks has said like her trash is her trash. And it's like, that's all great. But as long as we're able to recognize that. And I don't think it's a reflection of the individual person for consuming it. But like, yeah, taking it out of like the individual consumption and making it more about putting it more on a macro scale will probably help.
No, I agree. But then I think going back to all of the debates around personal reading habits and like what people choose to read over other things, and yes, critiquing the industry, but then also trying to figure out a way to critique like people's choices about what they read
without making them feel stupid for it, or maybe just critiquing the trend, right? Like,
yeah,
trying to get people to question why they're interested in this thing right now, you know. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing, but being like, why do I want to read this? Why is this the only thing I want to read? You know, like some people will like only stick to certain genres and certain types of literature, and like having them question that will then have them question why this kind of stuff is being pushed to them over other kinds of literature. I think, you know, this like rise of kind of like smut and like spice on like TikTok, for example, which has really influenced, like, and Princess Weeks talks about this in her video. There's another video that we can link in the description that also talks about this, but just like the prevalence of people consuming, you know, spice, for example, has really influenced spice being pushed up in the bookstores and like being sold to people on these main tables at the front of the bookstore, where it had previously been kind of more niche and like pushed to the back. And just thinking about like why people want to be reading spice right now, there's like so many reasons. But I think even with the sense of people wanting to watch Bridgerton or like Emily in Paris and knowing that it's probably not great, but it's like, why do people want to watch that right now? There's probably a level of like fatigue. Lack of attention spans will consume something that's like easy to digest faster and like explain to us, you know what I mean?
Then do you think models like that of Wattpad, which involve people writing for interactive audiences and people who are basically consuming it like social media or entertainment, you brought up in our conversation with Princess Weeks how you think it's kind of a different way of reading and how there's something kind of beautiful and communal about that, but then do you see drawbacks?
Yeah, well, I think I'm even thinking about like TV shows and the way that they've started to kind of like feed into audience, like fandom, basically, right? And start to tailor the events of the show to speak to the fans, which has then kind of destroyed the quality of the show. And I think a similar thing can be said for this. Like, if you're letting an audience determine the outcome of your book, that's one, giving into like audience gratification and pleasure, and then not giving in enough to like maybe a theme that might be more uncomfortable or one that might not fully satisfy them, but might be an important thing to have to sit with. You know, like sometimes you read a book and at the end you're like, wow, I'm gonna go
walk into the lake. But it's like, that's sometimes an important feeling to be left with. And like, art shouldn't just always make us feel good. And I think maybe that could be an outcome of people being able to kind of determine the outcome of a book, or like being able to put their two cents into it.
I read a profile of Anna Todd, and one thing that kind of stuck out to me was just how responsive she was to fans, even when they were making after movies. Like, she was on set for the films, and she was really intense about the specificities of like a dress that the character was wearing, because she was like, the fans will tear me to shreds if she wears this dress because it's not the right shade of red. And just being so absorbed in that and going, okay, well, she's this one author who blew up on Wattpad. But like, she blew up. She is very wealthy and very successful, and like, could point to the future of like where literature is going. She's constantly like on social media interacting with people. It becomes way more about the brand than it is about the actual work. And I think, piggybacking off of what we were talking about in our Ruby Core episode, that concerns me about something like Wattpad having that kind of power within the industry.
Yeah, totally. I think that that is really concerning. I think about just like, even with YouTube, or you know, there are YouTubers who will be like, what do you guys want to see next? Or how would you prefer that I film my videos? I think like a lot of vloggers do that. What kind of content do you want me to make? And it's like, why don't you just make the content you want to make? You know what I mean? And why don't you determine for yourself? And I think, you know, writing is often a collaborative process. Like, writers will often consult their friends. You know, they'll have an editor. You know, it's not just like one person writing the whole thing. But yeah, I think it's a dangerous precedent to set for art. And I think it's happening in many mediums. But I think Wattpad could definitely influence the larger world of literature.
Yeah.
Down the line. Hopefully not.
I kind of wanted to go back to the idea of like how we consume books, our reading habits, and the idea of like books as entertainment versus books as literature, books as like content versus their own experience. And I just wanted to get your feelings on kind of the debate on how we should be reading. Like, going back to talking about genre, talking about audiobooks, talking about the different ways that we choose to consume it.
Totally. I think I've been like very critical with myself and the way I've like approached reading in the past few years, in my recreation years, let's call them, my recreation era, where even with audiobooks, I kind of feel like in the home, when I'm at home, I feel like I always need to be consuming something. And often I'll be really mean to myself if it's not something that I feel like has any benefit to my brain, or like won't benefit my own practice of writing, or benefit my own practice of like making videos. Even like, if I'm not watching a film that doesn't pertain to my videos, if I'm not reading in a way that pertains to my writing, what is the point? And I think being critical of that and realizing, okay, that's also because I just cannot just sit still. And like, I've one, monetized my hobbies, but two, I just can't just like sit with myself, or I can't do anything for joy anymore. But I constantly have to be kind of like consuming something. I think I'm being a bit more critical of that with the audiobooks, because an audiobook, it has a set time, right? Like with reading, I'm also kind of a slow reader. Depends on the book, but like with nonfiction, pretty slow. And like, it takes me a while to read. But with an audiobook, it's like, it's just going. It just goes. Someone's already narrating it for you. So it's like, yeah, this is a quick way to get this all in my brain as fast as possible. And then like, I did it. I did the book. And then I'll go mark it off on Goodreads. And it's like, I'm using Goodreads to force myself to read. But then what does that mean? And like, why am I forcing myself to read? Shouldn't I be like wanting to read, not forcing myself to read? And so like, I find that like, even I definitely turn reading into an act of consumption and like identity formation, which I think is concerning for me. Not concerning, like, and I am glad I'm reading, but it is something that I'm trying to be kind of like mindful of. And I would love to get back to the place where I just like sit down and read, and I'm so excited, and that's just like a thing I'm doing for pleasure and for fun that has nothing to do with anything, you know.
And do you feel critical of yourself when you choose to read certain types of books over others? Picking something that's like a lighter read or a bit more trashy or whatever you want to call it, just for the sake of reading?
Yeah, I haven't read something trashy in so long. Like, all the books I've been reading are ones that I feel like I should be reading. And like, of course, I want to hit the classics. And again, like I was saying, catch up. But I haven't read something even remotely trashy in so long. I think the closest I would have gotten was Circe by Madeline Miller, which is like a beloved novel and like isn't trash, but it was a bit more frothy than the kind of stuff I've been wading through, you know.
I know. What I like about Sally Rooney is that it's like
a lot of what I'm reading this for is the sexier parts of the books, but like it has a level of more prestige than reading a straight up romance, even though it is a romance book, basically.
She is the perfect contemporary author because her books make me feel both good about myself and also feel good.
Yeah. But yeah, this idea of do we want trash in our literature, how we should go about that, and like how we should think about the books we're reading. Princess made some great points, and I'm going to get to her.
This is sort of the question I wanted to end our episode on, and so I wanted your thoughts on it. And we did kind of touch on this a bit. Just going back to this debate about how we consume books as like either literature or content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are people who have very strong opinions in both camps. There are the people that, like you said, just let us enjoy it, just let us, you know, kind of read uncritically. And then there are people who are now swinging like very hard in the other direction. And they're like, no, everything we consume, we should be doing so with a critical eye. I guess I wanted to know like where you fall in here. You've already expressed like kind of like a nuanced opinion between, but if you wanted to expand on that.
Of course. I mean, I don't think books are content. Like I also hate that like because of the social media world, everything is content, because it's like, what a horrible way to talk about art. You know, art is subjective and art is what you put into it. And I think that there will always be room for lowbrow art. But I think that people don't like to think of their stuff as lowbrow art. And I'm like, girl, my brows can be lower. Like, I'm like, I love it. I love Space Jam. I'm never going to sit here and be like, highbrow. I'm like, no, my brows are furrowed. Like, I can't even see. I'm like the dad in fucking Luca. But like, that's fine. I've chosen that path. I think that's the problem, is like, I think even on the more progressive elements, we have this way of like treating elitism as if it's like inherently bad, or like academia as if like it's inherently gatekeepy. And I don't think we need to gatekeep anything, but I think a level of awareness is just good to have in general. Like, people should be able to know what is a good book and what is a good movie. And if they don't like it, to know what's good about it. Like, what's a movie that I saw recently? Under the Skin. And objectively, a really, really good movie. I hated every second of it. Like, I every single moment of it was torture for me. And I'm okay with that. I can have a conversation about that. And I think they feel insecurity about that. I think it can feel, especially when you are just trying to enjoy things, it can feel like a target attack of being like, oh, you think I'm this because I like this book. Like, I'm racist if I like Twilight, or I don't like Black people if I like ACOTAR. And it's like, that's not what anyone is saying. But when people are bringing up the racism in these works, and your response is to just shut down and push that discomfort off, then yeah, you are participating badly. And like, you should probably think about that for your own sake. Because what does it say about your love of this thing if the first time you hear that something is bad about it, your response is like, everyone just wants to be offended. Like, that's a really weird response to have. And I think that's kind of the problem, is like, media literacy is not just about knowing how to read and absorb text, but also being able to understand that like, you yourself are entitled to have your tastes, but there are conversations that do still have to exist beyond just your personal enjoyment. And in today's society, honestly, it's just hard to not get bombarded with stuff, but just be online less, honestly. Like, I think like, just like, go outside, girl. Get a book club of people that you can talk about. Like, I'm not really on Twitter that much anymore, and it's great. I text my friends and we talk about Bridgerton together, and no one needs to know our takes except each other. I also understand the need to turn your brain off. I understand the need to be like, I'm just gonna sit down and read my little trash. And I think that if we want to embrace that mentality, then we have to be able to say, I like trash and I'm proud.
Eloquently put. And then I guess like, adding on to that with the trash of it all, like, do you have personal standards about even just the artistic merits of the trash? Or like, when you're in trash mode, is it, what is this feeding? Like, what is this giving me?
There's a good example about this. I was reading a book that my friend had recommended to me, and we read it because there's gonna be, we saw a sex scene and we're like, ooh, let's go. And so I was just reading it to try to get to that part. And the things I cannot stand a female protagonist that hates every woman on the page. That was the first ick. I cannot stand a male love interest that is like super sexually experienced and like always towering over, but like, is also incompetent. I can't stand a female character who is like, I want to be a warrior, and then the first time she tries to warrior, everyone dies. I was literally just crying. Like, I can't believe this is happening. And then they finally have, like, real, like, not real, but they finally have sex at the end of the book, and I'm like, this is unacceptable.
Oh, no. I
was like, so for me, my trash things are things like, it's sexism, it's racism, like, even the writing itself, if it's, like, bad writing, I don't want to name names, but bad writing, I can kind of, like, if the story is interesting, if the plot is compelling, I can kind of go with it. But when I see just, like, blatant sexism, like, blatant misogyny, I'm just like, I'm not doing with this. Or just something that is just not very inventive. Like, I really don't need another story about, like, a 19-year-old who's just out here riding dragons and, like, is malnourished but has, like, an amazing rack, you know? I'm just like, all right, thank you, I guess. You know?
That's just my life. I don't need to read about
it. You know? I'm like, what did Nicola say? Like, a representation for women with amazing boobs? I'm like, yes. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to get at right now. But yeah, like, trash to me is just that kind of stuff. Like really toxic male love interests who, like, I'm into simps, okay? I need simps. I need you to be, like, especially in fan fiction, because fan fiction, especially when you have, like, an enemies to lovers plot, they make the male character so simpy and begging, and, like, I'm like, that's what I want to see.
No, thank you for so much for coming. Genuinely, I feel like fan fiction has such, like, a rich history, and, like, the people that are invested in it are so invested in it that I was, like, a little intimidated to even go near the subject, like, as someone who's an outsider. So being able to hear your perspectives has been really helpful in kind of getting a fuller understanding of it, and I think it'll really, like, help add dimension to the episode. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. Can you tell our audience where they can find you?
Of course. Thank you guys so much. You guys can find me on YouTube. Princess Weeks is my name there. New video coming out soon, hopefully. I'm also on TikTok as Princess Pendulum. And unfortunately, I'm still on X as Weeks Princess, but you don't have to engage there. And then I'm also Princess_Weeks on Instagram. So just twiddling away.
Rehash is hosted by Hannah Rain and me, Maia. It's produced and edited by me, and the intro and outro song is produced by our talented friend, Ian Mills. Thanks for listening.